Welcome to Under the Radar, a show about independent iOS app development. I'm Marco Arment.
And I'm David Smith. Under the Radar is usually not longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
So we are here live in Apple's podcast studio at WWDC 2024, and we have some special guests today for this special interview episode of Under the Radar. We have Serenity Caldwell, design evangelist here at Apple.
Hello, hello.
And you might recognize Serenity as our first returning guest on the show.
I feel very honored.
Yeah, thank you. And we have Kristen Oro, product marketing for developer technology on VisionOS.
Hello, hello. Great to see you guys today.
Hello, welcome to the show. So what are we talking about today, Dave?
Yeah, so I think the wonderful opportunity we have here is to talk through VisionOS, Vision Pro, and to, I guess, dig into it in a way that it didn't this time last year at WWDC. It had just been announced. Very few people had ever had the opportunity to wear it, to see it. Now we're 4 months into it actually being out into the world. And so it's an interesting opportunity to just talk through making great apps for Vision Pro. Because I think it's an interesting place as a developer to be. We're at the starting line of that platform where we're still working out how we as developers can make great apps for Vision Pro and kind of talking through what are the hallmarks of a good Vision Pro app, what are the attributes of that. And I think there's a great place to start. I'd encourage anyone who's listening to this who hasn't already to watch the Designing Great Vision OS Apps, which is I just think was a tremendous video for explaining a philosophy to bring to this platform. That if you have experience with iOS or macOS or other places, it's a great start. And I think what was very interesting in that Sarah broke down the attributes of a great app into four categories. And I think walking through each of those gives us a great sort of jumping off points to discuss. And the first one of those was intentional. And it was just essentially, it's coming at this platform. It's a different thing to the other platforms in lots of different ways. And I think there's an interesting challenge for us as developers is finding what parts of our app would make sense there, or what experiences or things would be useful. And I was curious, just now that you've actually had sort of the opportunity to see other developer apps, what are some of the things that we should be considering in the thought process we should go through when we're deciding, should we bring our app to VisionOS? And if so, what parts of it?
That's a great, great question. I think what's really special about VisionOS, and you kind of hit the nail on the head, right, is that it's such a new platform. For many existing developers, we have folks who have been developing just for a 2D screen in the past, right? And being able to move into a 3D space, that requires a bit of thought of like, okay, what's my key moment that's actually going to feel so, so relevant in this world, right? I think DJ, we focus on that a fair bit in Sarah's session, is a great example of this, where they have a phenomenal 2D app experience, right, in the iPad, right? It's a fantastic way to interact with music and DJ and really, like, get into the music. And so when we moved, you know, when they thought about how to move to VisionOS and what they could do, obviously, the opportunity there is really cool, right? DJing not only in your own space and being able to practice on something that looks real and feels real is super, super exciting. But then pushing that sort of next boundary and thinking about, well, what's really core to the DJing experience? Like, how do you flow into it? And when we talked to Kareem Morsi, who's the CEO, who also is, again, quoted in that session, it's something really cool where it talks about, like, DJs really love being in a flow state. And you see YouTube videos of DJs being on mountains and really cool things like that. And, like, really, really just, like, vibing with the music. And he's like, what if we could bring that experience into something like Apple Vision Pro? And that's where those environments come through, and you're finding yourself being able to DJ there. And it's what I find magical about that experience and sort of that transition from that intentional key moment is that they're taking something that is very, very personal to the DJing experience, and then they're making it accessible to everybody. I don't know if you two have tried DJ, like, in spatial computing, but it's so
I'm honored, yeah, that you think I would have that, yeah, skill.
Well, so here's the thing, right? I was very intimidated when we first started working with that team. Very, very, very intimidated, because I'm like, I have never touched a turntable in my life. I have one record player. It is to play three records. That's it.
Yeah.
They make it accessible to everybody. They make it sound great, where you can genuinely, you can throw on two of the DJ songs or songs from Apple Music, and they have you up and running and feeling
so cool in like 2 minutes. Kristen, you've tried this.
Yeah. And one thing I love about it too is they build on that iPad experience. So if you're familiar with the iPad app, you actually see some of those iPad UI elements. And then you see how they've reimagined it for spatial computing, taking advantage of 3D moments, but also showing how UI can be 2D at times. It can be 3D. You can literally put your hand out and engage with a space that allows you to control the music. Or you can, you know, find those little buttons that you might have seen on the iPad app that you maybe first got familiar with.
Yeah, it's this really good combination. I think that's one of the things, you know, not everybody is going to have a slam dunk like, oh, I know exactly what this is going to be in a spatial computing sense. But one of the other things about that video is, you know, we've mentioned, I think, over 10 developers that are making incredible apps on the store. And you actually hear from them one-on-one in that session. And they're all across such a broad range of topics, right? And so I think one of the things that we think is really crucial is, like, it's not that session is not just a checklist of you have to do every single one of these to be a great VisionOS app. It's more like a design mood board for spatial computing, yeah. where it's just like, here are how apps from very, very different topics. We got, you know, kitchen design and weather and sport, you know, a sports media experience. You can find sort of that key moment in your app that feels right, or that might feel exactly the way that you want to dig into a spatial computing experience. And from there, that's where you experiment, you iterate, you test, and you push forward.
And what I thought was very interesting about it is essentially it seems a lot of it is being intentional about scoping what experiences that you currently have on the iPhone or iPad make sense in the spatial mm-hmm. context. That it isn't necessarily that coming at it with, I'm just going to take everything I can do on an iPhone or iPad. It's like there are certain things that will work better and create more richness if you're bringing it into a spatial context.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love what you did when you were exploring with your app, David, honestly, because sure. It's not like you brought all of your features one-to-one over to VisionOS when you were experimenting. You're like, what actually makes sense? What kind of widgets would I actually want in my space? And I really loved the design explorations you went through over the last, 6 months? You were blogging.
Yeah, yeah.
You were blogging about it. You were sharing your designs in public, which we love to see as design evangelists. Like,
sure.
It's really, really special.
Yeah, and I think what I found was The easiest place to start is obviously if you just recompile your iPad app into VisionOS, you can get sort of a starting point. Mm-hmm. But it is unlike.
I feel very seen right now.
but even where you are, I think there are, like, in Overcast, there are some of those features that are going to make sense in a spatial context, and there are some things that aren't necessarily going to apply as well.
Honestly, I'm not even sure if the entire app makes sense in a spatial context. But I'm curious, like, what we saw, you know, in these videos and in what you're, you know, showing off and exploring. We're seeing a lot of apps that are completely custom 3D volumes and 3D objects and 3D environments and everything. There's also this whole world of apps that are, for lack of a better word, boring. That we just want to have, like, UI controls and, you know, just basically, like, you know, the VisionOS UI kit equivalents of just seeing, and Swift UI, of course, you know. But, like, you know, seeing, like, here's regular controls, regular interfaces, here's a split view, and here's a list, and stuff like that. How should we be thinking, like, in terms of, like, is it worth bringing that kind of app to VisionOS? From both a usefulness perspective, and also, like, I hesitate to say doing it wrong, in the sense that, like, I feel like, you know, by right now, I just let my app run in iPad mode because I didn't finish the VisionOS port yet.
We love that.
Great.
It's great. Yeah.
But it does kind of feel like I'm doing it wrong, or that it's like a substandard experience in some way. Is using the standard controls with a native VisionOS app another step on that ladder that's also kind of substandard mm-hmm. to a full 3D interface? Or are those considered peers in some way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's really, first of all, I love having compatible apps on the platform because, again, what I love about Apple Vision Pro is it is a computer in its own right, right? Like, I use Apple Vision Pro with Mac Virtual Display. I use it with multiple apps during my day to get work done. So it's really awesome to have apps from iPad and iPhone that I know and I love, and I'm able to, like, launch that rather than like having to DDoF or like look through, pass through to use an iPhone or an iPad app. So like that is a great first step. And I think we're very unified on like wanting folks to opt in where it makes sense for their program and their platform. And then there are some apps that do need a bit of work before they're going to be working well on in sort of a native context. And it's okay to be in a compatible sense or compatible app in that time. But yeah, taking a step, I mean, there's a reason why so much of Swift UI is parity, right? And then and even increases and just adopts the beautiful design language of VisionOS. There's a reason why UIKit works on VisionOS, right? Is that we really do see like 2D windowed experiences are fantastic. We don't, not every app needs to be 3D. And we think we even say that in the session.
Totally. And you can have your compatible app and that's great, but we did a lot of work to make sure that if you recompile, you get a lot of that look and feel that feels native in that VisionOS environment. And so even just having the subtle depth with the UI or being able to have that beautiful plate that allows that transparency allows your app then to fit inside the VisionOS look and feel. Even if it's mostly 2D, it sits and fits very nicely next to a more spatial app. And like Sonari said, it's the foundation that allows you then to build that spatial layer onto it when you're ready or when you find the right use case.
Yeah, I think two great apps that come to mind are like Carrot Weather and Crouton. I mean, both incredible like indie app developers, right? Those are solo proprietor shops who have fantastic windowed experiences, right? Crouton is a cooking app and Devin put a lot of effort into, okay, how does my UI transition into sort of the glass material and what like color changes do I need to think about? Because he uses a lot of colored text in the iPad version that maybe doesn't necessarily work quite as dynamically on the glass material. So he thinks really carefully about that. And then he's found some really smart ways. I mean, one of the other things that I think windowed apps really succeed in on VisionOS is you've got this infinite canvas, right? And what I love about some of Devin's experiences is he really adapts the window size. It's like, oh, if you want to go through cooking steps, you know, he actually brings out a separate window that's smaller and compact. And you're able to kind of look at it while you're like prepping. And like, we would never use VisionOS while, you know, on a hot stove, or at least I wouldn't. But from a baking perspective, from a prepping perspective, it was actually, I did this a couple times, like prepping biscuits and prepping cookies. And it's really fun.
Like planning out that meal and like, really getting into it.
Yeah, exactly. And Carrot Weather is another great example of like, we take in, you know, all of that compact information. And I mean, Brian like packs it in on the iPhone and the iPad. Like there's so much to access there. And then on VisionOS is really able to expand the canvas and show more information, and then has started to experiment with these really great 3D elements, like the 3D globe that represents like wind temperature and the like. And that's a really great example of someone who uses standard components and does a fantastic job, and it feels native and natural on the platform. So I think there are a lot of opportunities to bring an experiment, even if you're not, if you're like, you look at 3D content, you're like, that scares me. I'm not a 3D developer. I don't know how to make a fully immersive environment.
See, I feel very seen about that. That is the thing that when I saw VisionOS, the thing that made me scared to get started was the sense of, it's like, I'm not a 3D artist. That is something that I have no experience in, no expertise, probably no talent. But what I found was interesting about staying in the windowed experience is there's enough sort of 3D affordances that are added even in a 2D app, that the like the tab bar is elevated out, or the ornaments are given a spatiality that isn't. There's a 3D-ness to it, but I'm not creating a 3D model in Reality Composer. It's just part of the system. Yep. Is that there's a depth, there's still a richness and a depth that feels natural on the platform that is sort of I'm getting even without that expertise.
Absolutely. And one thing that's worth mentioning is both SwiftUI and RealityKit are really great examples how we're allowing you to write one line of code and use it across platform. When you use that line of code, even in SwiftUI on VisionOS, it'll have those like subtle 3D elements with depth and space. And then when you use it on your iPad app, it obviously fits within that space as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. And of course, with RealityKit kind of coming across platforms this year as well, that's really exciting. We're trying to make it easier for developers to build the right app for the right platform and allow themselves to be on multiple platforms and have them feel great so that it doesn't just feel like, oh, I'm just porting my iPhone app over platform to platform. It's really breathing and local. I mean, one of the things we saw in the developer labs, I mean, we've been at the developer lab since the very beginning of Apple Vision Pro. I mean, it was such a great opportunity to connect with developers worldwide and mm-hmm. really hear from them. It's like, what kind of apps do they want to build and what are their fears and how are they feeling a little bit like, oh God, 3D content. And it was so magical to talk to folks and have them come in and feel like this is really cool, but I'm nervous. And then have them say, oh, in 10 minutes I recompiled my app. And like, yeah, there are some things that I need to change, but oh, now I understand. Now I see like what I can potentially do. And maybe this is going to require a little bit more work. And this is something I can do in the immediate term. But I think really seeing your app in device and doing that initial recompile step is the first step to what do I do from there? And how can I augment and what makes sense in this space?
Yeah. And I think what's interesting too, what I found coming to this platform is also the understanding that I think like is the sense of the user interaction model, making it comfortable for a user
yeah.
is very different because there's a physicality to it that it's not a window on something you're holding in your hand. It's almost an object in space that you interact mm-hmm. with physically. And so there's a lot of differences that you need to do or having a visual design that is responsive to a user's glancing around. Is a very different way of thinking about it because something I used to notice is there was a lot of places where I had visual affordances that you need on iOS to like indicate that something's a button, that something's selectable. Whereas on VisionOS, the interesting thing is if someone looks at it, it will tell them that it's a button because mm-hmm. it turns into a button. And I think those kind of visual comfort things were very different and interesting to get into. And I was curious if you had just thoughts about things we should be keeping in the back of our mind about making sure that we're building something that's actually going to be comfortable to our user to adapt to that physicality.
Oh, yeah. We had so many conversations about button shapes.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really great question. I think some of the big things that we saw in the developer labs, first and foremost, like you said, thinking about your UI from an eyes and hands perspective and, you know, the hover effect does so much that you don't need the drop shadow. You don't need the outline. You can do a lot with the different colors. Materials as well to indicate kind of hierarchy on your page. You can do really interesting things now that the tab bar has moved from where you might think, you know, on iPhone down at the bottom or from like a split view perspective. You can do all of that on VisionOS. So you have some more flexibility again in presentation. And I think that's really awesome too. Like one of the things we see when folks first move from an iPad or an iPhone over to VisionOS is there's this moment of, oh, should I just, you know, this is the default window size, like 16:9 window size. And we see a lot of folks just start developing for that. I think you and I had that
sure,
conversation
yeah, yeah.
too. And then at a certain point, it's like, oh, I can change the size of the window
yeah.
to fit my content. And I don't necessarily need to keep it here this way. I can make it larger. I can make it smaller. But we have a lot of conversations about that in field of view, right? Finding ways to, you can explore expanding the content while keeping it comfortable in someone's field of view. We've talked about multiple windows too. One of the really wild things about spatial computing is obviously there's depth, right? In a way that you don't necessarily have on a 2D screen, which means that if you layer objects in front of and behind, your eyes are actually doing the same kind of work as they would in reality. So if you have multiple windows and you're asking somebody to be switching constantly between those windows, your eyes are actually going to get really, really tired. So it's one of the reasons we talk about like thinking about when you're creating your UI, can you keep it contained in a single window? Where does it make sense if you're moving to a supplementary window, if you're moving to a modal, like making sure that attention is focused and that if you're having to make those attention switches or those context switches, they're not like rapid fire. You give yourself some time to focus. One of the other things that we mentioned in the session is thinking about branding in the context of VisionOS.
Sure.
So obviously in iOS and iPadOS, we've done a lot with colors and with color tinting and the like. And I think a lot of people very early on were like, oh, okay, VisionOS, my branding color is a dark blue, so
sure.
my window is going to be a dark blue.
Just a giant wall of dark blue.
It turns out that making a dark blue like on the glass material looks a bit like the monolith from 2001 A Space Oddity.
It's not good.
Yeah. But that's another thing of like goes back to that idea of like testing in device to really understand what people who are using your app are going to feel is you very quickly, you're like, oh, I'm going to do that. And then you get in device and you look at your window and you're like, if I look at that for more than 5 seconds, it's going to make me claustrophobic.
Sure, it's too much.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think that's a really exciting thing about like thinking about comfort when designing for VisionOS. Kristen, do you have anything? Did I miss anything?
Oh, yeah. I think spatial computing is just a brand new platform. And so getting people that time and device to iterate as a developer and then obviously seeing how your consumers are responding is so important to be able to refine that experience. And that's honestly what's inspiring to Serenity and I when we share like our favorite apps of saying, you know, this is a brand new way that this developer is thinking about that nuance and experience and how they're addressing that comfort and the needs of the user in that moment.
Yeah. That reminds me of something that I ran into with when I was working on Widgetsmith was the reality of having essentially unlimited window size in a way that I'm so used to on a phone. It can only be so big. And scrolling, you know, is a natural gesture on VisionOS, but I would say it is less desirable than just making, like, I could just make my window sort of tall and long.
You have an infinite canvas.
And so I can just, that was the easier solution to avoid unnecessary scrolling whenever I can by just making the window tall. It was an interesting way it's much more comfortable if you never have to scroll. If you never have to do it's a slightly more involved gesture than just looking and clicking your fingers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the gesture system is something I really love about VisionOS and the fact that, you know, you can just keep your hand in your lap while you look at items and tap and target them. And then even experiences that are more physical, right? We have a session later this coming out tomorrow on designing interactive experiences where we talk about Encounter Dinosaurs a little bit. And one of the things that is done in Encounter Dinosaurs that I think is really cool is this idea of that is an experience where physical, like custom gestures is crucial to the experience, right? If you want to interact with the dinosaurs, you're holding your hand up to let them sniff you. You might want to try and pet the big dino. He might snap at you. But that's not necessarily how everybody wants to interact or can interact. So there's a fallback interaction system built into that app where you can actually choose the alternative gesture system. And that gives you more of a like video game type modal experience where you can actually just interact by looking at an action sheet and basically being able to say like, oh, I want to be friendly to the dinosaur. I want to be a little bit more ferocious to the dinosaur. So I think there are opportunities with VisionOS, like even though we give that the affordance for really awesome custom gestures, we're also always thinking about accessibility and ways to not only like make it accessible to the folks who can like jump up and interact and slice with both hands. Synth Riders is another great example of that, where Synth Riders is, of course, an Apple Arcade game. It's really great. It's been on a couple of other platforms as well. And you use like both hands to like I don't even know how you'd describe it, Krista, like punch or like design, like dance your way through through objects. But they have a one-handed mode so that the recognition that like sometimes you may not be able to use two hands while you're doing this. So those are other, I think, really great affordances for comfort and accessibility when we think about designing these apps, is even if you're going into that 3D space, you're going more immersive, you're exploring custom gestures, to always think about how you can support the standard interactions and really make it accessible to all.
Yeah. I think, too, I think VisionOS is at an interesting place for me where it reminds me very much of the early days of WatchOS. So both Marco and I developed, you know, WatchOS 1 apps, WatchOS 2 apps. You've been on this journey for a long time. And the, you know, WatchOS 11 now is a completely different platform than it was back in the early days.
And so much better.
It is immeasurably better. And I think what is interesting, I have exactly the same thought of VisionOS 1 was a very strong start. But to think about going forward, where it's going to be. And to be a developer, that's part of that journey, that it feels very young at this point. But there's a lot of opportunity. And I think even just in this, you know, this first release of Vision 2, I'm seeing lots of things where you're responding to the needs that we run into. Like I said, we have custom hover effects now.
Yeah.
Which is one of these things that was like really bugged me that I couldn't do previously. But it's like, nope, now I can do that. And it's lovely to see that journey is you know, underway and look forward to seeing where it's going.
Totally. With VisionOS 2, there's so much that we're either addressing, as you said, things that we're hearing from the developer community. And that's a result of the direct engagement with, you know, our engineers, our design evangelists with those developers throughout the last year. You're also seeing a lot of ways that we're just trying to make it easier to make incredible spatial apps. I think a great example of that is Tabletop Kit, where you have, you know, pieces, dice, cards, and it's all built in. So you can get that experience up and running to have, you know, a meaningful tabletop like game you can play with a friend, you know, spatial personas and all of that built in, trying to reduce that time so the developer can focus on the experience and what they want to build. And then the software and VisionOS 2 can actually just support that all the more to make it faster.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, Kristen. It's for so long. And I think the idea, again, designing spatially can be a really daunting thought for a lot of people. And the fact that you can take all of these, you know, these frameworks that you know and love on other platforms, and they just work out of the box. And then now our thought is like, how do we push that forward? How do we make it even easier?
Yep.
Spatial photos and video, I think, is another great example of that. You know, we have a great session that's I think came out yesterday on how to really build your own spatial photos and video and how to incorporate that stuff in your apps. And that's, you know, stereoscopic video, the idea that you could pick it up and shoot it with your iPhone and suddenly you have 3D video in your pocket. Like that's not something that has been accessible to all that many people until recently. And I think that's another exciting aspect of this platform is like, how can we reduce complexity for developers, for consumers, just for everybody to really get a chance to experience spatial computing? The other thing I think that we've really learned in the developer labs is that one-to-one connection with our developers and understanding how they want to build apps and what they're excited about. And I think, I mean, we've got 30 sessions this year on VisionOS 2. And you might not think that from, you know, from initially, but you dig into it and you're like, oh man, there's so much new stuff here. It's a bunch of new RealityKit APIs. There's a ton of improvements in Swift UI from Windows and like being able to automatically position windows and automatically close windows when others open, to the additions to volumes, to things we've heard from developers about immersive spaces, right? Being able to tint pass through for interesting game and experiences. There's all of these little features that I think we're just building on top to really enable developers to make their best work on this platform.
Yeah, and I think for me, I enjoy that process of being on this platform early on. I think I could understand a developer who says they want to show up in 5 generations of this in Vision OS 5, and that's where they wanted to start. But for me, I enjoy being at this part of it because it's nice to be at the part. And I think in 5 years, I'll be a better Vision OS developer having gone through this process of having seen the, you know, feeling the pain point and then finding the way to work through it. Makes you better at understanding when to do that, when not to do that, and having a deeper understanding of the platform. And so that's one of those things that I've enjoyed about, you know, it's a young platform that's definitely in its early infancy, but it's been fun to see it even start to develop a few months into its, you know, introduction.
Yeah, and I mean, we love that. We're not going to know what your pain points are unless you poke at them and you tell us, right? Like we have some great ideas for the platform, but it takes developers. We are better together when we understand what it is that you want to build, how you want to build it, how you want to use this platform, the wild ideas that you have. I mean, I think of our 2 ADA winners this year for spatial computing and some of the initial ideas as they were exploring this platform. It's just like, wait, you want to do what? Sure. you want to have people bounce up and down? Oh, actually, that's really fun. That's fantastic. And I think those kinds of things only happen when we get to have that like developer Apple interaction. And that's why I love the developer labs so much. I think it's been a really, really awesome learning opportunity for us.
Yeah. I was curious, if someone was wanting to get into VisionOS development, what would you say is the best sort of starting points for them to learn? Is it the videos? Is there sort of other places in the developer resources that they should start to look?
Yeah, that's a great question.
There's so many developer resources. So I think this time of year is a great time, as Frenity mentioned, the sessions and diving in there. I think the best-in-class development we've been, you know, sharing with SwiftUI over the last few years is a great foundation as well.
Sure.
Just thinking about, you know, SwiftUI, RealityKit, all these core frameworks that sit at the foundation of all the best apps on Apple platforms. And again, you can write one line of code and use it in so many different places. So I think that's a great place to start ideologically. But we really, you know, expanded the number of resources that are available this year. And that was a huge priority for us.
Absolutely. We just launched a new pathways program on developer.apple.com. So we've got a VisionOS pathway, which kind of outlines, it's like, what do you need to get started? We also have these amazing guides that are going throughout WWDC 24. So there's a guide on each of our main topics, including spatial computing. And that talks about, all right, here are all of the sessions that are new, as well as we've released a ton of new sample code too. And the sample code projects, I think, are really, really great ways. Like our sample code projects from last year, like Hello World, Destination Video has been updated this year. So for people building media experiences, they can play with the new AV kit features like light spill and docking. Like I think there's a lot to dig into. And we've really thought about, yeah, that initial kind of guide in. And then also we're continuing to think about ways for creators and folks who are not necessarily necessarily, you know, haven't been with the platforms for a long time, right? And they might be new to Apple developers.
Sure.
They might be creators on other platforms who are curious about spatial computing on Apple Vision Pro. And we're really thinking about ways to reach them where they are as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Serenity Caldwell, Kristen Oro. Thank you so much for being here. Everyone out there, thank you for listening. Best of luck out there building your Vision OS apps. And we'll talk to you all next episode.
Bye.